and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Thursday, March 17th, 2016.
St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot. Well, yeah. We're drinking wine. We should be whiskey.
I guess. Yeah.
Or green beer or something.
Some gross thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so on St. Patrick's Day, we are celebrating our Irish heritage by sitting indoors and podcasting for you about politics.
Yeah.
Which, if you could see the weather out, you'd understand because it's really gross.
Yes.
We got teased for a couple weeks, like, hey, spring's here early, guys. 65 degrees and sunny. Not just yet.
And now it's like 20 because
it's about 800 below and snowing.
Yeah.
A blizzard. Okay.
Yeah, it's gross.
It's
anyway.
35 and flurries, but.
It feels like a blizzard because it was so nice.
Yeah, it's really gross, really depressing that that's happened again. Anyway, yeah, we had our live stream the other night, and really, really sorry about the technical issues. I did not realize until I went back and listened, like, the echo problems and the levels the people of Skype calling in sounded like they were screaming to a megaphone in your ear, and we sounded like we were whispering down the hall, and we had obnoxious echo, and then some of the Skype callers you couldn't even hear. And I put all that on me. I'm sorry. We will sort that all out for the next time, I promise, and it won't be amateur hour.
Yeah, hopefully. We're still working on the live stream thing, and we appreciate your patience, and we are very sorry, and it was really good stuff, so sorry you missed it.
But. Yeah, I mean, I can still put it up as a podcast. It sounds absolutely terrible.
Yeah, so. It's not get-throughable, then.
So if anybody really wants it, I guess let me know on Twitter or email, and if you guys demand it. I mean, it was good, like,
we had so many Greg Dworkin on. We had Will McLeod from Hopping Mad.
We had Nathan, Molly, Dana.
We had everybody on. It was great.
It was great.
We had some very substantive discussions.
But people who actually tried to watch it wasn't so great.
Yeah, it was great for us. Sorry. We had a great time.
We did.
But I guess that doesn't count.
Anyway, a lot happened, and there's a lot to talk about. Brief recap. It's official tonight with Missouri that Hillary swept all those five states, Illinois.
Yeah.
Ohio, Florida,
all of them. I don't know. Missouri, I know she won by about 1,500 votes.
Yeah.
And Bernie's not asking for a recount. So
no, he's let it go.
She got two more delegates than him is all.
Yeah.
So, why bother?
But right? there's stuff to talk about with Bernie. Bernie is not quitting. He just made that abundantly clear on Rachel Maddow. And he's not going anywhere.
No.
In fact, he's trying to find some tricks up his sleeve.
He is. So he was on Maddow today, and he basically said two things that I think were substantive. One was he's going to go to the convention. And
which we figured.
Yeah.
And we want him to.
He's got plenty of money. There's no reason for him to go anywhere.
Right.
But that he was going to go to the convention and try to get the superdelegates to go the other way.
Well, let me explain how he parsed it.
Sure.
Okay. Because that's what's been floating around the news. Like, Bernie's got this strategy to convince all the superdelegates who right now they all favor Hillary by a massive margin to all change their minds and go for him.
Right.
Which is ridiculous.
Right.
But what he actually said on Maddow was, if you look at places where we ran up big margins like New Hampshire and Colorado, wouldn't it make sense for those superdelegates to actually support us? And so if you take that at face value and then proportionally the superdelegates went and supported the candidates the way the pledge delegates did, then that's not quite as extreme a notion as what you were just saying.
Sure.
But that doesn't change the math at all, of course.
That's true, but we're going to get into this intensely when we talk about Trump and the Republican convention, but that's just not actually the way it works. I mean, that's just not how party politics works
in
this country.
Well, on the Democratic side, it kind of
it can.
Technically,
I'm not saying
it could.
That, of course, it could. Yeah,
but it never has,
could.
And it probably never will.
It just doesn't usually, because the delegates are people who are highly partisan, who are highly party oriented. That's why they were chosen to go to the conventions.
And they've put in their dues and done their
that's
work.
That's right,
and
exactly.
We could be one day, so be
exactly.
nice to us.
And it would be really unlikely. It's not that they couldn't. Of course, they could choose to change their minds and vote for Bernie at any moment. And likely they'll
any
vote
of the
for,
delegates could, technically.
Absolutely. Well, so not on first ballot. But
Right.
On second ballot, if someone doesn't have the required number of delegates
then
to
it's
pass
a free
the threshold,
for all.
Then it is a free-for-all. And like I said, we're going to talk specifically really in-depth about Trump and the Republicans. And I know a little bit more about that than the Democrats. But it's unlikely, if not almost a little unprecedented, that the outlier with less delegates, the superdelegates, would choose to favor or go for at the DNC. It's not something that's likely to happen.
Isn't it funny, though, that we've been talking for weeks and weeks about the Bernie people freaking out about the superdelegates, thinking Bernie will have a delegate lead and he'll lose on superdelegates, and us saying, no, that's not going to happen if he's got more delegates.
Yeah.
And now it's like the other way around. Now Bernie's like, well, that's the story, supposedly. He's like, well, I'm going to go to the convention and convince all these superdelegates to all change their mind. And then even though I'm trailing in pledge delegates, I could still win.
And
it's
even
like,
though she got more of the popular vote than I did, I'm going to make sure the superdelegates vote for me because I'm the only one that can beat Trump.
Okay, well,
what he said today.
Well, but that's not what he said on Maddow.
Well, he said that he's a better candidate
against
Trump.
Well, no, sure. But that's, he's been saying that all along. But he didn't say all the superdelegates pledged to Hillary should change their mind and go for me, regardless of the...
Well, he dodged it. She pushed him on it several times, and he dodged it, and she finally said, like, all right, I'm going to switch it around, and I'm going to ask you, does the person who has a higher delegate count going into the convention have kind of the right to the nomination?
And he said, well, yeah, sure, but...
Well, and then he dodged it, and he said, but we're going to go forward. I mean, the question is not if she is she going to have more delegates than he is, because really, at this point... It's unlikely he's going to have more than
there's a chance.
She is.
There's a chance. He's going to win a bunch of states. I just don't think there's enough delegates in those proportion in the proportionality of those states.
Right.
Even if he runs up a few big margins here and there.
I mean, you and I have been telling people for weeks
that the math
doesn't work for his favor. Like, she's likely going to have more delegates. So the question really that Maddow is asking is, if you don't have as many as she does...
How are you going to do it?
How are you
going to
do it?
Nominee?
Are you going to try to pull some things? And he was like, basically, yeah.
Okay, fine, but that's not going to happen.
No, they're not going to switch.
But let me throw this out there.
Okay.
Before I get to that, why don't you throw out just a little outline preview of what else we're going to cover tonight?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot going on, actually. So we're going to talk about Trump and the Republican convention and some of the stuff that's been going on in the Republican Party about Trump. We're going to talk about Merrick Garland, who is the President Obama's nominee to the Supreme Court to replace Justice Scalia.
We got a lot to talk about.
A lot to talk about him. We're going to tell you kind of the whole rundown of his life and his record, and is he good? Is he not good?
And of course, the
politics
of what's going on now.
And the politics of whether or not he'll actually be confirmed. That whole thing. We're going to do.
Spoiler: no.
No. Maybe. Well, we'll see. We're going to do a couple local things, a couple House bills that have come up that are not specific to. You'll be interested in them, is all I'm going to say. And we're going to talk about what happened in Congress today with Flint.
So back to Bernie and his what has been floating around today and what he said on Maddow.
Yeah.
You know, let me throw out this other hypothetical scenario wherein he's trailing in delegates but convinces the supers to flip for him, which he can't say on Maddow or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Remember... Again, I am 99.999% sure absolutely nothing is going to come of the FBI investigation into the use of a private email server while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. But on the 0.0001% chance that the FBI gets a wild hair up their ass and slaps the cuffs on Hillary, well, not literally, I mean, they would indict her. Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe she'd have to take a mugshot, I don't know.
I don't know.
What if that happened in June?
And
Hillary still, I mean, there's nothing in the party rules that says she still couldn't be the nominee.
No.
And assuming she didn't drop out, then Bernie does have a case to say, oh, no, yeah, now I really am the best option against
Absolutely.
Trump.
Absolutely, and absolutely the delegates who go to the first ballot, if that were to happen, those who are there, so there's two kinds, and this is based on state rules. There are bound delegates and unbound delegates for the first round.
It's a BDSM thing, right?
I wish. No, so the bound delegates are by state law required to vote how the vote went in their state.
Right.
On the first ballot.
Right.
The unbound ones, which only make up about 10% of the delegates, can do whatever they want. But generally, they go along
with
the rules.
They go like the superdelegates.
Second
ballot.
Like
the media likes to say, they're unbound, they're wild cards.
Right,
it's like, no, they vote along.
I mean, they are. They technically can do whatever they want. On the
I'm talking about our side. We haven't got to the Republican side yet because God only knows how that's going to go.
I mean, this is sort of what I'm talking about. And the rules are similar. And I'm not as sure about the Democratic politics of this as I am Republicans just because I did less research today about it because there's so much interesting stuff to talk about on the Republican side. But Yeah, so if it were to get to a place where on first round, neither Sanders nor Clinton had enough delegates to get to the threshold, on second round, certainly.
Then they arm everyone, wrestle, right?
They can do anything they want. And so if she were to be indicted, then absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could vote Sanders and they could vote McAfee. I mean, you know, it's...
Hey, look, Joe Biden popped up.
Yeah, I mean, they can do whatever they want.
No, that's not going to happen.
No, but, it's not going to happen.
But again, it's still out there, and the FBI still hasn't made a final ruling. So if you're Bernie Sanders in his campaign, why not...
You go
not,
to the convention, for
you,
sure.
Well, you go to the convention, but also plant that, like, when somebody asks... Well, how can you possibly still win? You say, well,
right.
Maybe I could convince superdelegates. And on the surface, that's absurd. But he can't say, but well, what if, right. You know, at some point, maybe he will even say it if he's that desperate. I don't know. What here's the thing that's become clear about the Sanders campaign, right? After New Hampshire, they got a taste.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, shit, we can win.
We could actually win.
And once you get that taste, it's really, really hard to let go.
Yeah. Exactly right.
And we're still Sanders supporters. Understand this.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're also realistic, and we don't want the party torn apart.
No.
And Bernie should do whatever he can do within the rules of the party without going too far and tearing the party apart, which he's not. I think some grumpy Clinton supporters would say that he's going too far, and I would not say that.
No.
Even close to that.
No.
He's just a guy that's still trying to win.
And he is winning. I mean, he's doing substantially better than anyone thought he could do. And certainly, in terms of the numbers, like, he's not some kind of fringe candidate. It's not like 10% of the population is voting for him and he's just hanging in there.
Right, right.
He's scoring really big numbers in places he ought not be. And the states that are coming up look pretty good for him. So there's no logical reason for him to drop out.
He'll close the gap a little bit. It just seems really unlikely. He would need something like 65% of the remaining delegates.
Yeah.
Which is a tall order. The math is just really tough. And some of those states, he'll carry those margins.
Yeah.
But not every state.
No. And that's where the superdelegates come in. It's true. I mean, he's not saying anything crazy. Really?
Yeah, yeah. He's saying by the rules and the math, if we went to the convention and I was trailing, but I was able to get all these superdelegates to vote for me, I would be the nominee. And he's not wrong.
If he wins the next 20 states and she wins none of them.
Yeah, but she's not going to
win
none of them.
That's likely to happen, but let's imagine that he just gets this crazy momentum and he wins every state from here on out, with the exception of one or two. And he gets to the convention and he says, look, you know, we didn't have it at the beginning, but we won the last 20 states in a row or whatever it is. Like, the American people have spoken. Superdelegates, come on board. I'm only a few behind her.
I mean,
it's possible. I agree. I'm just saying he's not...
Because that's when we have to go back to the reality of the thing that he's not even a Democrat until recently.
Yes.
And Clinton has put her time in the party for decades now.
Yes.
So these things matter.
Party loyalists.
These are
that's how you get to be a delegate.
And this is from my fellow Bernie supporters who always kvetch and whine about this. Bernie chose to run as a Democrat.
Yep.
When he decided to do that, there were built-in headwinds to that, especially when you're running against an establishment candidate like Hillary Clinton. I know establishment is a dirty word, but in the context of running for the
nominee of the party. The party, not the country, the party. The
right.
party decides the rules, the party decides the delegates, the party decides everything. So, yeah, she's got an advantage. That's because she did her career differently than he did.
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
And you need a lot to overcome that. And it looks like he might come up a little bit short.
Yep.
But, you know, he's going to try. Mm-hmm. And he should try. And he should not drop out. And if he wants to say some of the things he said, here's the thing that really raised my eyebrow. And I can't believe he said this, even if he thought it. And maybe you feel differently now after you've done a little research. But he said... They asked him about Garland,
mm-hmm.
and he said, oh, I would yank him and put in my own guy.
If I won the election, I would ask Obama to withdraw his name from consideration and wait till after the thing where he goes and talks and is the president now. I've been having confirmation and nomination in my head for so long I can't think of the word. Anyway, wait till
the
January
swearing in, the oath
20th.
Of office.
Yes, January 20th, the... You think of the word.
Swearing in.
It's called something. But anyway.
Inauguration.
Inauguration. Thank you. Wait till the inauguration, and then I would want to elect someone because I think we can do better than Merrick Garland, because I think that we may turn the Senate and that we get a better candidate. Now, I was shocked when he said it. I was like, because Rachel Maddow asked him the question, and
I'm still in the shocked kitchen when making he dinner, said
and I'm like, no, of course not. And then he's like, absolutely. And I'm like, what? What?
But politically, it's not such a smart. I mean, I guess, yeah, you're really driving home that, you know, outsider, super hard left wing of the party. But part of his problem has been this supposed detachment from Obama and, yeah, and Hillary's closer to him.
Yes. And the story tomorrow is going to be even Bernie Sanders thinks we should wait till after the election to nominate a Supreme Court nominee. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
Exactly.
Dude?
Obama is in this pitched battle with these intransigent Republicans who don't even want to give Garland a hearing. And you basically have Bernie jumping in and say, yeah, I don't want this guy either.
Exactly. I mean, Hillary needs to hit him hard.
Oh, she will.
On this.
She's going to cream him on this.
She has to.
Yeah.
You know, she's been in Barack Obama's sort of riding his coattails a little bit. To her credit, she deserves to. She was his Secretary of State. She was a senator while he was president. Like, well, I guess that's not true, but she was his Secretary of State.
On the flip side.
But...
On the flip side, removing ourselves from House of Cards world.
Yeah.
This is why we love Bernie, right? Because he's absolutely right.
He's just honest.
Like, we can do better than this guy.
And that's
and we're
going
to get to that.
Yeah.
Not that this guy's horrible, but...
No. Would not be my choice.
No. And it wouldn't be Bernie Sanders' first choice, too.
No.
So Bernie was being 100% honest.
It would not be Obama's first choice to Obama's
admission. Well, we know that.
Yeah.
When we're going to get to all that.
So, but politically...
Head scratcher
for me.
I was
so shocked. I was like, what are you saying?
Head
we're
scratcher.
Trying to get somebody confirmed, or maybe we're not.
But
maybe
even if
we
you,
aren't trying to get someone confirmed, maybe
you
we
can't
are
say that either, though. But you can't
and
say that either.
Bernie is a good mouthpiece to be like, nah, not this guy. And then the Republicans have to put their foot in their mouths and all the nice things they said about this
guy. Oh, it's
like
a reverse trolling thing?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, if Bernie doesn't want this guy, maybe we do want him?
Maybe, or maybe, like, I don't know what we're doing, but, like,
no,
I'm
I think,
so shocked
I think
to
Bernie,
hear him say
I think
that.
Bernie was being honest and appealing to his base, which is, that's the reason we love him, right?
Well, it is, exactly right. And I agree with him. I don't want this guy either. I don't know.
You'd take him if you had to over whoever Trump nominates.
Obviously. And I want a 9-judge court badly. There are some serious issues that are coming up that I think are going to be 4-4.
And I think a lot of them would be on the right side, from what I know.
I think so, too. Some of them not so much. And maybe we should just jump into Garland.
Let's jump into Garland. Bottom line on Bernie is he ain't giving up. He ain't quitting.
And he's saying some very...
Interesting things.
Confusing things to Rachel Maddow. Okay, so let's get to Garland really quick. So the guy's name is Merrick Garland. He is a crusty old white dude, which is...
He's a Jewish guy.
I don't know.
He is.
Okay.
So that's another thing people are talking about. Greg brought this up. There would be like 4 Jews on the Supreme Court.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who are the other ones?
Ginsburg?
Kagan?
I think so.
I was Jewish. I have no idea.
Yeah, I know you don't.
Ginsburg, Kagan.
And Thomas. No, I'm kidding. Possible, but no.
I don't know.
Kagan, Ginsburg, and...
We got Stevens, we got Roberts. Roberts is definitely WASPy.
Oh, yeah, no. None of those Republicans are Jewish.
Obviously, Alito is Italian. He's probably not.
Breyer?
Breyer, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's Breyer.
Okay.
Another Jew.
All right.
So this would make
the
fourth Jew.
Four.
In fact, that's the interesting thing, right? We got 4 Jews and 4 Catholics, no Protestants.
Really? Roberts is Catholic?
They're all Catholic.
Is that right?
Thomas, Alito, Roberts...
Just the 3 now, because Scalia's dead.
No, one Kennedy. Kennedy's
very
Catholic.
Oh, yeah, no, Kennedy's Catholic. You're right. Of course he is. God. Okay.
4 Catholics, 4 Jews.
No Protestants.
So we need
Protestants
the tiebreaker.
Freak out. Everybody freak out.
Well, no, I mean 4 if it would be, if Garland would make it 4. 4-4.
But right now there currently are 0 Protestants.
Or just 1?
No.
Or I think 0.
If it's...
No, because I'm forgetting somebody. There's 3 Jews,
Sotomayor.
4 Catholics.
Is she Catholic?
Probably.
Oh, God. I don't know. Who cares?
She's most likely Catholic. But no, it's interesting because we're a majority Protestant country, right? Still?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, depending on how you split it up generationally. So my generation is majority not religious at all.
Well, I know. But the Supreme Court justice age.
Oh, for sure. Catholic, I would say, and then Protestant, or anyway, some combination.
A lot of us yedlach on the Supreme Court, and we're taking over, just like everything else. We've taken over the movies and
Hollywood
music and industry, and we're coming for the SCOTUS now, baby.
Cruz said something about
New York values.
Yeah, New York.
My dad said Cruz doesn't like the Jews.
Yeah, I guess not. That was my first thought. Okay, Merrick Garland graduated with honors from Harvard, and then went on to Harvard Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And then he clerked for Supreme Court Justice at the time, William Brennan, who is a notable progressive justice.
Yeah, Brennan is great.
Yeah, he was amazing. He did work in the private sector for a brief time, but has spent most of his career in public service. He was assistant U.S. attorney and has served as a high-level aide to a couple of different attorneys general. Interesting thing would be he would be the third sitting justice with prosecutorial experience, including Alito and Sotomayor.
We have mixed feelings about that. Although Sotomayor is just fine, despite being a prosecutor.
Correct. And I think a lot of that has to do with
maybe Marsha Clark will be a Supreme Court justice one day.
You were one, and
yeah.
How high up? You know, are you a county DA? Are you a federal? I mean, there's a lot of factors, but this point's important for later when we talk about his record on criminal justice.
Just a thought bubble.
Yeah.
You think Trump would nominate Chris Christie? I bet you.
Ooh,
he
to
would.
The courts?
Yeah. Federal prosecutor.
My God. I think he wants attorney general, is my opinion. I think we were talking about this at breakfast the other day that.
Could you imagine
Trump
Christie?
Would just be like, oh, my lawyer.
Isn't it sort of a perfect, if you live in the idiot bubble of Trump and you're just thinking a new Scalia, another pugnacious, you know, Italian guy.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Loudmouth jerk. Like, just.
Yeah, but nowhere, I think, in the intellectual ballpark of Scalia.
No,
I mean, Christie's a smart guy. I'm not.
Not, but Scalia, the much as I despise his judicial record.
Yeah, Scalia could be a schoolyard bully, but he'll do it with his words.
Uh-huh. He was a brilliant jurist. And I think the fact that Christie has zero judicial experience, though he was a prosecutor.
No, but this is Trump.
I know. Oh, I know. I mean, like I said, I think Trump would just be like George H.W. and nominate Harriet Meyer. Just nominate his personal lawyer, the guy who's always threatening to sue people, just like that guy. No, my lawyer. He's great. He can be on the judge. He can be the thing.
It's like a sick, perverse part of me wants President Trump just for the comedy.
Just to be like, oh my God.
Just for the comedy, the daily comedy.
Oh my God. I know.
The United States would finally be the reality show that it's sought to be for so many years.
How many years? Now I know. Okay.
But anyway.
Okay. So.
I'm kidding, of course. I do not want Donald Trump to ever come close to slipping the presidency.
It's a fun thought.
I just
experiment,
like to imagine a bizarre world where so I could terrible. Observe it from afar.
So bad. Okay. So he was appointed to the D.C. Circuit Court in 1995 by President Clinton.
Mm-hmm. There's one strike against him.
Yeah.
For
although,
the Republicans are concerned.
Interestingly. During that confirmation, he was asked about his idea about judicial activism. And here's the quote from him. Federal judges do not have roving commissions to solve societal problems. The role of the court is to apply law to the facts of the case before it, not to legislate, not to arrogate to itself the executive power, not to hand down advisory opinion on the issues of the day.
Which is exactly correct, except they all do it.
Well, except they all do it, except he kind of doesn't. So his record bears him out on this a little bit.
Which is
really...
Which is exactly what you, in theory, want in a
But
justice.
I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. I want a progressive justice who views the Constitution as a living, breathing document.
But you could see why Obama loves this guy.
Of course. Well, yeah, he's a constitutional scholar.
And why his peers love him.
And why Republicans don't hate him. So
they have to pretend to.
Well,
because Obama nominated him.
Yeah, exactly. But so this is another reason I think that this is why this nominee is who it is because in relatively recent history, I mean, it's been 20 years, but in judicial history, that's pretty relatively recently, he was confirmed to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
With
and he
flying
was confirmed
colors
with
by
flying
prominent
colors
Republicans.
By prominent Republicans. And I've got a couple of quotes for you. His nomination was stalled by Senate Republicans not because they didn't like him, but there was some sort of in battle about whether or not they even wanted to fill the 12th seat on that court.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he had to be renominated and blah, blah. Exactly, mm-hmm. right? But he got confirmed by 76-23 in the Senate. Yeah. Senator Orrin Hatch, if you guys remember him from Utah.
Orrin Snatch, yeah.
Yeah. Super, super conservative guy. Said, quote, he is not only a fine nominee, but as good as Republicans can expect from the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
He repeated that sentiment in 2003. He also had support of senior administration officials from the Reagan Justice Department, as well as that of Judge Lawrence Silberman, who was appointed to the D.C. Circuit by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
So he was widely accepted by the Republicans.
Sure.
And I think that for Obama... And for
the
most part
by the Democrats, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody loves this guy.
And you got to remember, this is the 90s for the Democrats. We were a much different party, certainly, than we are now.
Oh, yeah.
Very much more centrist, very much trying to hold on to Reagan Democrats, very much trying to not be too liberal or progressive or activist or anything else.
Especially when it came to... law, quote, law and order.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
Because even progressives were like, we need more cops on the street.
Yeah, and broken windows theory of criminal justice, which I can get into at some point if you guys care. Yeah, there was a crime wave essentially in the 90s that was very, it was very real.
Yeah.
And very different from the climate that we look at now. And there was a public outcry for more law enforcement, for harsher law enforcement, for harsher criminal justice statutes in general,
and let's mandatory
minimums and the third strike law, and a lot of this
was coming from prominent African American leaders in these inner cities.
Yeah.
They said, "Help us. We need more law and order."
I don't think they meant the way that we ended up doing
it. No, of course not. They couldn't foresee that. Neither could Bill or Hillary Clinton.
Well, and when we talk about the 94 crime bill, you know, yes, it's had large and lasting negative implications for the African-American community. That was certainly not its intention. That was certainly not either of the Clintons' intentions.
We were in this naivety belief that we were in some sort of post-racial atmosphere where increased law enforcement and tougher laws would be not arbitrarily... the hand of justice would not come down harder on African-Americans on average.
Right, and instead it's the exact opposite of that, which is that, you know, especially when you look at the difference between sentencing for crack versus cocaine. So crack is the hardened, smokable form of cocaine. It's the same drug. But cocaine, you know, you could have, I think it's like 100 times more cocaine than crack and get the same sentence.
Yes.
And crack was really prevalent in African-American communities because it was sold in smaller doses at cheaper price.
$10 a rock,
basically. Yeah, exactly. So white people were doing the same drug as black people, and black people were getting extremely higher sentences. Yep. There's a lot that was going on in the 90s that was really, you know, people talk about Hillary Clinton saying some of the things that she said back then about these super predators.
And we're not excusing them.
I'm not.
But we're explaining the climate.
Exactly. It was a very different time. And I know it doesn't seem like that long ago, but the way that crime was happening and the way that people talked about crime and talked about criminal justice and talked about the justice system was wildly different than it is now.
Yes.
And the problems were greater. They just were. We just had more crime back then. Even statistically, you can look at it. So... anyway, getting back to Garland, it doesn't surprise me particularly that, given his record on criminal justice, which I'm about to get to, that Democrats supported him, given the climate in 1995.
Exactly.
As opposed to the climate in 2016.
That's a really, really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. By the way, I'm getting this information from SCOTUS blog. They did a write-up piece back in the day when they thought maybe Stevens was going to retire and sort of compared the two. So there's not a lot of comparisons here between him and Scalia, but I think that knowing anything about Scalia, like, you know
exactly...
We're not going
to... Any Obama appointee compared to Scalia is kind of pointless.
Right, right. Okay. Let's see.
By the way, anything you want to know about the Supreme Court, just go to SCOTUS blog.
It's the greatest thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. There's even a really funny thing when, I can't remember who it was, but it was being confirmed, but there was a bunch of news outlets that thought SCOTUS blog was the Supreme Court's blog.
Yeah, it was Sotomayor.
Yeah, was it Sotomayor? Yeah. So funny. And they were like, nope. They don't actually
How
do that.
How could they say these things?
I don't know. Okay. So this is an interesting, maybe it's a little wonky, but I want to talk about it anyway. So when you're an appeals court judge, your job is to take cases from lower courts that get appealed and rule on them. And sometimes they go all the way to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. right? And it's particularly important for appeals court judges, as part of their record and I think also as part of their pride, to not have their decisions be overturned by the Supreme Court.
Right.
So if you make a decision and you're the last step before the court,
unless you're a circuit court in Texas, then you don't care and you just want them
because you're doing it sort of adversarially,
you're
right?
You're being that you're activist judge to do that, that they pretend
right.
to hate.
But in judicial circles and law circles in general, appeals court judges yeah. really, really, really intensely dislike it when their decisions are overturned by the Supreme Court, because what that means is you're not interpreting the Constitution correctly. You're not interpreting the law correctly, and we overturned you, and it's sort of like a black mark on them.
No, it's like turning a report into your boss and getting back all the red marks on it.
Exactly.
And,
it's like getting an F in college or school, or whatever.
And your boss probably isn't even James Spader, so it's really not fun.
Exactly. Yes. You're funny. Okay. So one thing to note about Judge Garland is that he has not done a lot of cases that resulted in Supreme Court review. They have not granted cert, which means they have not agreed to hear any case that he specifically wrote the opinion on. But his circuit court has a variety. I think it's like 5 or 7 judges that are on his court. So it's like a mini Supreme Court, essentially.
Right.
So he hasn't written any of the cases, the opinions specifically, that have been reviewed by the Supreme Court. However, 7 of the cases that he has been involved in that escalated to the Supreme Court, the justice has agreed with him in 4 of those 7. So he didn't write the opinion, mm-hmm. but they mostly agree with the opinions that he has, 4 out of 7.
Yeah.
That's notable, right?
Yeah.
That means he basically has a good understanding of the law, the Constitution, and what the Supreme Court's going to decide. Now, it's only 4 out of 7, so there's 3 that didn't work out that way, but that's something that I think is interesting to note. And I'm not going to get into what those cases were. We can talk about that at some other point.
Four out of 7 is a decision, right?
Right. Okay. So here's the thing that's the most significant. We're going to talk about what we know about his record. When people are nominated to the Supreme Court, the public, I think, wants an answer about specific, what we call litmus tests, right? How do you feel about abortion?
Yeah,
How do you feel about the death penalty? I've seen a lot of generic charts and graphs in the past few days,
but Rachel did the deep dive for you, so.
And the real answer is, and what people find frustrating is, when they go through the confirmation process, you will hear them say over and over and over again, I won't speculate. It depends on the facts of the case, and I don't have an opinion about any specific sort of social issue without the facts of the case.
But every single senator desperately wants to get their...
I mean, they'll ask them 10 times. And they literally will say, like, I don't have an opinion about abortion.
Yeah, it's like
I have an opinion about a specific case.
It's like a weird mating ritual almost.
It is, and I know it's frustrating, but there's a reason for it, which is that the Supreme Court does not decide whether abortion is legal. The Supreme Court looks at a specific case and looks at whether there's something in the Constitution that prevents or allows whatever the issue is. What they decide is
a law that would affect abortion. They decide whether that law is constitutional or not.
Based on the facts of the case and based on what's in the Constitution, does it violate some basic privacy? Now, obviously...
So de facto, yes, they decide that.
But they're not supposed to come in with an opinion. They don't write the laws. Right.
They don't write the laws. They determine whether the law is constitutional or not.
Whether the Constitution allows that law to stand mm-hmm. or not. That's their only job. And if it's not in the Constitution, if it's not a matter that has a constitutional basis, the Supreme Court can't hear it.
Right.
So we don't really get to ask him, hey, how do you feel about abortion? How do you feel about the death penalty? How do you feel about Citizens United? He's not going to answer that question. So all we have to look at is his record.
Yeah, but you can... Smart senators will frame the questions in such a way that you can try to glean.
You can say, if you were a justice in Roe v. Wade, how would you have decided? And he will say,
even more,
I wasn't.
Even more, even more nuanced than that. Like, yeah. They'll pick some really obscure case and say, this justice or that justice said this
said
or that.
This.
What
how
do you think
feel?
About this
yeah.
opinion?
And but if, mostly what they do is they look at his record, which is in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, he had to deal with, like we just talked about, cases that went to the Supreme Court. So he's going to deal with some of the same issues that they dealt with.
Right.
And so what they try to do is they try to parse out from how he voted on certain cases, how he feels about certain things, if they're
right.
smart. So we're going to talk about that just briefly.
But yeah, at the same time, we're kind of wasting our breath because this guy's not going to get a hearing. But let's pretend he would or will.
Well,
maybe.
We're going to talk about the politics of that because I don't know if that's true.
Okay,
but,
okay. But let's pretend this
is who
this,
Obama wants.
Let's pretend this is real life with a real functioning Congress and that the nominee is actually going to get a hearing like
yeah.
he's supposed to.
Yeah, let's do that. And he's also on the short list when the other three or four of them die or retire, so...
Yeah.
It's possible that
this guy is going to wind up on the court probably maybe one day or
not. Yeah.
Unless this thing becomes so crazy politically charged that he can't. But anyway,
yeah.
moving on.
Okay. So the biggest thing that I have an issue with is criminal law. Given the climate that we're in right now with, you know, law enforcement and communities of color.
Prosecutors getting voted out.
Prosecutors
DAs.
Losing. So if you guys didn't watch the live stream, we covered that in brief that the DA from Chicago was primaried out on Tuesday.
And the prosecutor in Cleveland.
And Cleveland, both, right?
Yeah.
It was both, mm-hmm. yeah. So being in favor of criminal justice reform in terms of communities of color and police brutality and that kind of stuff... It's something that's super important to me.
Yep, me too.
And I think it's a progressive issue. And on this issue, Judge Garland is not strong, unfortunately.
Explain.
And so a lot of that, I think, has to do with the fact that he was a prosecutor. And prosecutors are often very close to the police and law enforcement, and so...
Yeah, and they bring cases to the grand jury.
Yeah.
Of police misconduct.
Yeah. And then
no
argue
conflict
on
of interest
behalf
there.
Of the police officer, even though they're prosecuting them, it's... A really good system.
It's a shit show.
Yeah. So Judge Garland, this is quoting SCOTUS blog, rarely votes in favor of criminal defendants' appeals of their convictions. Only 8 such published rulings were identified in which he approved the appeal of their conviction. He didn't author any of the opinions on any of those 8 rulings. And think about this, like, 8 times... He thought that someone appealing their conviction
8
was,
out of how many?
Right? I mean, out of probably thousands.
Yeah.
So this is not good. The ones where he sided with people tended to be firearms related, which is also not great. So
well, yeah.
if they were having a firearms conviction or a Brady violation, he tended to side with the defendant.
Although
otherwise,
the NRA hates him for a lot of other reasons, but yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that, but yeah, so...
But no, that's interesting.
It is interesting.
Because nobody else is talking about that.
Yeah, I mean... Like, of this, I think we have Brady violation, firearms. So 5 of the 8 have to do with firearms, and those 5 are the ones that he sided with the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
So the screaming NRA better be careful what they wish for, because they might have found somebody a little more friendly than they thought.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I'm sorry to get off track here, but even in one case... He sided with the person even though they did not offer this argument themselves, which is a whole other thing we can talk about that is crazy. So he may be very Second Amendment friendly, is what I'm saying.
In certain cases.
Right.
I guess the NRA is really has a thing for him because they think or something came out that he might want to re-look at Heller.
Okay.
But I don't have the details on that. I'm just sort of half
okay.
remembering
we
something.
We can look that up later, but yeah. Okay, so quoting again SCOTUS blog, most striking, in 10 criminal cases, Judge Garland has disagreed with his more liberal colleagues. In each, he adopted the position that was more favorable to the government or declined to reach a question on which the majority of the court had adopted a favorable position to the defendant.
You can look at that another way, though, now, right? I mean, in terms of just being more favorable to the government, because lately everything that's coming to the Supreme Court is trying to turn things that Obama has.
But this is specifically in criminal justice.
In criminal justice,
yeah. So this is a defendant, an individual against the government in a criminal case. He tends to always go with the prosecution. He tends to always favor the prosecution.
But those have been the cases, right? Hobby Lobby.
No. This is criminal justice.
Sure. Okay.
That's
okay. Sure.
So
I'm talking
in
a much broader
later.
Scope.
No.
Though.
So this is specifically he sides with prosecution over defendants, even when his liberal colleagues are like, "No, this case is fucked."
Well, I'm saying why conservatives might look at that as an ironic red flag, right?
No.
Especially if they anticipate a Clinton presidency. Okay. I'm just thinking out loud.
I think that they like him for this, and we don't. Now, he also sides with the government, interestingly, when it comes to agencies. And that probably conservatives hate the most. So we can get to that in a second. But so anyway, when it comes to individuals that are charged with crimes that come up before his court, mm-hmm. he tends to side with conservatives and with the prosecution and not with defendants, even when there's a consensus on the court that the defendant has either been wrongly accused or that things are mishandled or evidence was mishandled or... you know, making a murderer style, you wouldn't want this guy on the court, which is not good. It's not good at all. And so much stuff is going to come up in the next term that has to do with this, given what's going on in our climate, that I don't... this is a big reason for me, and I'm a CJ nerd, and I just do not want someone like him on the court.
If we do win the presidency and take back the Senate, I think criminal justice reform will be on the top of the bill, at least if Hillary Clinton, you know, keeps up her promises to address that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so let's get on to, I want to talk about what we were just talking about. So, agency deference.
Yeah.
So, in a different way, he sides with the government. Maybe this is to your point that he just has sort of a thing for government being right. And this is in a very different way. But in a dozen close cases in which the court was divided, he sided with the agency every time. And the agency in this case is a government agency. So FedEx Home Delivery v. NLRB, which is the National Labor Relations Board. Lots of NLRB cases.
But that's good. That's something we as progressives
like that, right? So we want you to side with the NLRB. We want you to side with the EPA, the FDA, these are agencies
that are...
Maybe
the NSA not so much.
Right, maybe the DEA not so much. But he definitely has a preference for government agencies. And in the overwhelming majority of cases, he sides with them.
Well, tell me a little bit about this FedEx case.
I don't really know that much about it other than he was on the dissenting opinion, which...
Was it over overtime or...?
It was over whether or not the NLRB sued FedEx Home Delivery... about whether or not they could identify workers as employees rather than contractors. So FedEx wanted to have them as contractors.
Sure, so they
the
don't
NLRB
have to pay insurance.
Said, exactly, and, yeah. insurance, all the stuff, right? And the NLRB sued and said, no, you have to classify them as employees. The circuit court agreed, and our guy, Garland, dissented and said, no, FedEx, or I'm sorry, they agreed with FedEx, and he dissented and said, no, the NLRB was right. They should have to label these people as workers. So that's, mm-hmm. like, really progressive, right?
Yeah.
That's really good for workers' rights.
At least the outcome was progressive. We don't know if his thinking was progressive.
Right. And I haven't read these opinions. I mean, God, it would take me days.
We're not going to read all the opinions for you. We're just going to tell you the results and speculate from there, like good podcasters.
Right, exactly. So there was another one in which the SEC... which is the Security and Exchange Commission, sued...
Think Paul Giamatti and Billions.
Yeah, exactly. Financial Planning Association v. SEC. The panel opinion invalidated the SEC rule exempting broker-dealers from Investment Advisor Act in certain circumstances. So basically...
Probably a big insider trading conflict of interest.
Exactly. And he dissented and said, no, the SEC was right and they should not be able to do that.
Yeah, anytime the SEC does friggin' something, it gets upheld.
Yes. He upheld an FDA determination to approve a drug because it was being sued by... a different drug company that didn't think it should be approved.
Yeah,
so he said the FDA said
mixed
it should be approved.
Mixed thoughts on the FDA. I'm sure Dana does, too.
Dana has very, very specific thoughts about the FDA. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's just interesting that he tends to side with government agencies, even when he's in The Descent.
Yeah, I think for the most part, conservatives wouldn't like
that.
Recent climate.
I mean, big government and bureaucracy and agencies, and we should get rid of the IRS.
Yeah,
and we should get rid of everything.
The EPA and the Department of Education.
Exactly. Yeah. So they probably don't like that very much about him, but they really like the criminal justice stuff about him. When it comes to civil rights, which is kind of the thing everybody wants to know about, right? Like, so how is he on civil rights? The unfortunate thing is that we don't really know. And the reason for that is not a lot of it has come up under his term. So generally, he favored the plaintiff, which is good. Mm-hmm. So generally, he favored the person who brought forth the civil rights complaint. So that would be a progressive hit for him, right?
So if, in other words, if somebody's civil rights were being violated under the ADA or...
Actually, really specifically, this case, the Kolstad case.
Right.
This is super legalese, but there was an on-bank hearing that was denied, which means that it was, rather than go to a jury, it was before a series of judges, and it was denied having an on-bank, and he cited essentially with someone who was trying to come under the ADA to discuss limiting the availability of punitive damages. So anyway... He went with, we should not limit the availability of punitive damages under the ADA,
right,
and sort of with this on-bank hearing. So anyway, he definitely, in the times that he has had to talk about civil rights, it hasn't been something juicy like gay marriage or abortion or voting rights or anything like that. It's been very, like, kind of process wonky legal stuff. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a lot of sexy stuff to talk about. But most part, he has been good on the issue in the way that we would want him to be.
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to wrap up some of the deep dive stuff on Garland and then talk about the politics of his nomination. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hey, come on. And they boil them in oil. Our children are leaving and we have no heads. We drink and we sing and we drink and we die. We have no heads. No, we have no heads. They come over here and they chop off our legs. They cut off our hands and put nails in our eyes. O'Grady is dead and O'Hanrahan's gone. We drink and we die and continue to drink. O'Hanrahan, no O'Hanrahan.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We are talking about President Obama's Supreme Court Justice nominee, Merrick Garland.
Yes.
And Rachel did some of the deep dive on some of his... opinions and way he might sway. Of course, Greg Dworkin brought up an excellent point this morning. You just don't know what these guys are going to do until they get in there.
You don't.
You really don't. Like, yes. Souter, the conservatives thought was going to be a big conservative baron, like a Scalia type.
Yep.
And he was not.
Nope. Sandra Day O'Connor was nominated by George H.W. Bush.
She wound up being way more liberal than...
Was it even Reagan?
And they thought...
Yeah, way more liberal. She was a swing vote.
Yeah.
Which is endlessly irritating to Republicans. They seem to be more wrong, I think, than we are, generally. But
right, right. They just have better luck. Just let us nominate them. Then at least he won't be surprised.
Exactly.
Well, when was the last one that we thought might be kind of liberal and then was more conservative? You could maybe say that about... No, Kennedy was a Reagan appointee, so you can say
that
about Kennedy.
Yeah, so Kennedy would be another one that, like, super frustrating for them.
Yeah, they probably thought... Because he's an Irish Catholic, so they probably thought he was going to be way to the right. So we've been kind of lucky, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Recent history.
And...
Well, you know what? Clarence Thomas, just because he was black... They kind of... No, I'm serious.
Yeah,
and I vaguely remember that. I was just a little kid then, but I was already geeking out on some politics. And they thought on certain things he might be a little more liberal. No, he has not been at all.
And certainly his confirmation hearing is fascinating, and we'll talk about it at a later date.
Joe Biden was kind of the star of that one.
Yeah, there's an HBO...
In good and bad ways.
movie that's coming out in a couple of weeks, starring Kerry Washington as Anita Hill.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the guy's name who's playing Clarence Thomas, but he was Bunk in...
So it's not Cuba Gooding Jr. again?
No. Thank God, no. I can't remember his name, but he's great. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I love those kind of movies.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. So let's talk about... We know everything we need to know, or whatever we can know, I guess, about Merrick Garland at this point, Judge Garland. But the issue is, so...
Okay, so why did... Okay, first question. Did Obama nominate him because he genuinely wanted to and thinks he can actually be confirmed, or was it a setup?
Yeah.
Because...
I mean, so the kind of controversy for anyone who hasn't been following it is the Republicans are saying that Obama doesn't have the right to nominate someone because it's an election year. Because
he's a lame duck and it's the last year.
And we should wait till after the election and let the next president determine who the nominee will be.
Which is a completely made-up, bogus thing.
Yeah, and to the Democrats' credit, I think, we've kind of come out swinging on this.
They've been calling bullshit from the start. And saying, like,
it's not a three-year term. He was nominated yeah. for a four-year term, and his term is not over until January 20th of next year.
They keep pointing to a quote that Biden had made that sort of agreed, but it didn't matter because Biden's Senate wound up confirming that particular
nominee and they keep talking about this weird math of, like, it's been this many decades, or, I mean, they say it's, like, a ridiculously long amount of time since this has happened. The thing that's interesting that I think we should take note of is it's not that Scalia retired, right? This is not planned. He died, and so... Yeah.
He retired from the earth.
Exactly. Like, if someone had retired, then maybe it's a political thing and we could get into details about
well,
this.
Well, no, wait. Obama had him murdered because
right. there was oh, a God. I mean, over his head. Even Scalia's family was like, please stop saying
that. And we won't even get into
disgusting.
It.
It's disgusting. But since he died, there is an opening. And there's a lot of cases that are coming up that, and we've talked about this before, sort of what happens if he hadn't yet ruled. And so there's a lot of cases that may be 4-4, and then they go back to the lower courts, and there's no decision essentially made. So it's important.
Yeah, but I've been thinking about this a little more, and we are worried about that. But at the same time, Scalia was never going to be a swing vote in our favor.
Mm-mm. No, definitely not.
So there's stuff that we don't want kicked down to the lower court, but yes. it's stuff that was there. We would just lose.
Maybe.
What do you mean, what do you mean maybe?
Well, I think that there are cases where, yeah, I mean, you're right in terms of if there's a 5-4 decision,
yeah.
he's the five that makes yeah. it so that now it's a tie. Yeah. I agree. But I think that it's important that we have a full
court. No, I agree, and liberals agree with that. But, yeah. you know, if we just were going by the numbers, we would be right, would say, yeah, obstruct everybody. Let's do 4-4 forever. But the problem is there are votes that need to be decided. And
some of the 4-4s that come down are going to get kicked back to the lower court.
And then be law.
And then be law yeah. for the time being that negatively affect actual humans that live in this country, such as women in Texas.
Right.
So it's important that we get somebody that can decide to make it 5-4. Hopefully, I mean, I guess the political question is the Republicans are confusing to me because they're not going to win this election, right? I mean, well, Donald Trump's going to be the nominee, and he's not going to win.
Right, that's their best case scenario, right?
Right.
And who the hell knows who he would try to nominate.
But they also know he's not going to win. So why do they want to push it off
until... I think they might be deluded enough to think, like, Hillary's going to come in with, like, a baggage of an indictment or something, and he yeah. might win, or that they could steal it from him at the convention. I think there's a lot of scenarios where... people in the yeah. Senate, maybe not McConnell himself because he's a little smarter even though he doesn't act like it.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other senators that think, no, we could get Cruz in there or Kasich maybe somehow. Someday.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So.
Or, and the crazy caucus doesn't even care. I mean, a Democratic presidency is even better for them.
Yeah, they can just keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah, just keep stonewalling.
So the question is, this guy, right, this pick, we've gone over his record. He's not a particularly progressive justice. The previous two people that Obama has nominated and have been confirmed are Sotomayor and Kagan. And they are both women, and they are both progressive.
Pretty progressive.
Yeah. Pretty amazingly
Sotomayor
progressive.
More so than Kagan.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Kagan is too, but she's had to recuse herself a bunch of times because she was conflict of interest because she was an attorney on one of the cases or that kind of thing.
Right,
so,
a lot of civil rights stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but I think particularly looking at the Texas abortion closure case, all three of the women on the court came out swinging to defend the rights of women to choose. All three of them.
Well, that one should be 5-3 anyway. I'm less worried about that. And again, if it's 4-4, that means if Scalia was still alive, it would have been 5-4 and just would have lost. And at least if it gets kicked down, it can be brought back up.
We definitely have four. Looking at the transcripts, we have four.
And then it's good old Kennedy again.
Yep, Kennedy. And he's trying to dodge it. And we can talk about that at another point. But so this particular nomination is really interesting because I don't think anyone believes that Obama thinks this is the best guy for the job.
Well, no, see, I'm not so sure about
even
that.
Even Obama.
It's very typical Obama, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but even, no.
Well-liked, centrist,
no,
really good lawyer.
No, because look at his other two.
Really
Sotomayor? No way. She was fought so hard, people hated her.
But if he just did nominate another Sotomayor, then the Republicans' job is easy. Then they don't even have to explain their stonewalling.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think he did this. This is a
classic Obama
political move. It is not because he thinks that Garland is the best candidate for the Supreme Court.
He says that. Well, but he, two sides to that.
Yeah.
Because the Republicans could huddle and turn around and say, "F it. This is the best we can do. Let's suspend over and take it."
Yeah.
And then,
which is what they should do. I'm a Republican. I'm telling them right now, and I hate to give them good advice.
Oh, I would say the same
but
thing.
But I'm going
this
to.
This is as good as you're going to get, probably.
If you wait, it's going to be Hillary Clinton, and it's likely going to be a Democratic Senate, and you're going to get another Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Hopefully.
So if you don't,
God willing.
Yeah. So like, if you don't want that to happen, you better confirm Garland. And I think that's the strategic move Obama's playing.
And there's a lot of conservatives that are saying just that.
Exactly.
The problem is, don't try to talk sense to this Congress.
No, the Senate. Exactly. So Mitch McConnell came out and said,
no way, no
we
how.
Are not going to hold a hearing.
Yeah.
Straight up.
But there's even cracks in that armor now.
Absolutely.
You've got some senators saying, no, well,
yeah,
we're
so
going to
far,
talk to him.
There are six,
so it's not even a united front.
No, there are literally six Republican senators, which isn't a lot of them, but that's significant.
It's a leak in the dam, and leaks
said,
can grow.
We will meet with him, and we think that we should have this confirmation. The really interesting thing is there is some talk about, okay, well, we'll wait till after the election. So after November, when there's a lame duck Congress, then
they'll hurry up and
then
confirm him.
We'll confirm him or not. And they
but
literally
Obama
said
could
out
yank,
loud.
Obama could yank him right
he would.
From under them.
Absolutely.
Would he or wouldn't
absolutely
he?
Absolutely he would. 100%.
But then he would look. That's pretty blatant.
But what is it that what? Okay, but they're saying in public, if we win the election, then we'll nominate your guy. Or if we don't, I'm sorry, if we don't win the election, Republicans are saying, then we'll nominate and confirm Garland.
That's a flagrant
partisan politicking.
Yeah,
like,
but that's a dick move to Garland by Obama, especially if the drumbeat from our side is going to be like, this guy's completely qualified and you guys are being these horrible obstructionist assholes. And no matter how it happens,
and you know there may be backroom talking with Obama and another one of the like two or three that are going to retire that says, "Look, we're going to put Garland in now." And
sure, that could be the thought
too. If Clinton
too.
Or Sanders wins and we get a Democratic Senate, it's time for you to retire, and we'll nominate XYZ person who's a liberal.
Ginsburg's got to retire one of these days.
She
we
does
want
not.
Her to live forever.
She does not.
Kennedy's getting up there. Breyer's
Stevens.
Getting up there.
Yep. So I think my opinion is that Garland has on record Republican support, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are quotes from Republican senators saying
yeah, but
he's
that,
the
that
best.
Was back before the Obama era.
Sure.
Where you had to obstruct everything even if it made sense.
Yeah, but like what there
if
so,
Mitch McConnell was on fire and Obama tried to pass a law saying put Mitch McConnell out, he'd
don't
refuse
do
to
it.
Give it a vote on the floor
exactly.
of the Senate.
I know. So I think that he is doing it politically. I do. I think he's saying, kind of, I dare you to not confirm this person who is incredibly qualified.
He's qualified.
He's
moderate.
Already been confirmed by Republicans.
And everybody
he's
loves
moderate.
Him.
Everybody
his peers,
loves him.
His underlings,
yes.
the
yes.
people who have worked for him, people
yes.
that he has clerked for and that have clerked for him just love him. He say he's the most fantastic, wonderful
quote,
human being
undeniably
ever.
Undeniably brilliant
yeah.
is a quote.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's widely lauded as a great, great legal mind.
Prototypes Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, he's perfect, right? He's great.
And so you're making it so naked on the other side that it's obstruction just for the sake of obstructionism because Obama.
Yep. Yep. That's the move.
And that's going to hurt them.
And the move is also, like we said before, look, if you don't confirm this guy, you're going to lose this election. And then you're going to get somebody.
Well, you're going to lose anyway.
You're going to get another justice from a Clinton or a Sanders, likely Clinton, with a likely Democratic Senate.
But that's the box they're in, right? That's the box they're in because Obama nominated him. Right now, they're trying to spin this guy as a wild-eyed. I don't care what Orrin Hatch had to say.
Yeah.
Who's
no longer in.
The Limbaughs and the right-wing talking heads are probably calling this guy, you know, crazy communists,
totally
super left-wing, Marxists, Che Guevara tattoo,
and their research team will pull out some obscure case I've never heard of.
He hates white people, even though he's white.
Exactly right. Yep. But I think the larger story will be, you know, well, Republicans 76-23 in 95. Well, actually, it was 97 because of the delay. Confirmed him and said that he was perfectly qualified to do this. So there really isn't anything you can point to in his record or in his experience doesn't make him qualified.
And Americans, if you're being obstructionist and you can bullshit enough, they might accept it. If it's naked obstructionism, they get tested.
Exactly. If it was another RBG, it would be a partisan fight, and it would make sense that they wouldn't.
But we're not even talking about. No, we're not even talking about a hearing. They don't even want to give him a hearing because Obama.
Right.
And that has people pissed.
They won't
even
meet with him. So traditionally, when a person gets nominated to the court, they go before the Congress and they meet, or the Senate specifically, and they have this kind of like coming out party, and they meet everybody. It's like a debutante ball. And that happened today, and zero Republicans agreed to even meet the man.
And it's like everybody else in the world but Congress realizes that, and these numbers have been pretty steady for a long time, that Obama's approval is around 51 or 52%.
Yeah.
And Congress's is about 8%.
Yep. And this is why.
Well, this is a symptom, yes.
Yes.
And it's just going to widen that gulf even more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So does he get a hearing? I don't know. I honestly, if I'm a Republican, I'm like, just confirm the guy.
But,
seriously.
But they've been shooting themselves in the foot. When Cruz shut down the government over Obamacare, every single Republican strategist with a brain knew it was a terrible, horrible idea.
Yeah.
Now, it wound up not hurting them in 2014 because we didn't show up.
Yep.
But had it been closer to the date, it could have.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get any closer to a huge election than we are right now.
Exactly.
So, but that doesn't mean they're gonna do the smart thing or the least destructive thing. I talked about this with Greg. There was a time that no matter how partisan the politics were, these party leaders and the parties themselves acted as rational actors.
Yes.
But they no longer do that.
Right.
They've been hijacked by ideologues.
Yes.
So we can't assume they're going to act like rational actors.
No.
And even someone like Mitch McConnell, who is in his core a rational actor, can't be a rational actor anymore, or else he will lose his job.
Correct.
He will get primaried from the right.
Yep. Absolutely.
Or he will lose his speakership.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. That's exactly correct. And again, this is why I don't know. If I'm giving them advice, I would say do it. I don't think that they will. And
I would. It would make most sense, right?
If it were a Republican president scenario? And we had someone like Trump running, like not like Trump, but sort of like not going to win in November, and the George W. Bush, let's say, put up somebody that was like tolerable, but certainly not as bad as we thought it was going to be, I wouldn't want to wait till my guy loses to get someone that not only has like the country behind them, they've just been elected, right? So the country has spoken, they've got that political capital and momentum going. They're likely to lose the Senate. And you got a Clinton or a Sanders, as we talked about the other day, that are fighters. You're going to get somebody that's crazy progressive liberal, and there's nothing anybody can do if we win back the Senate.
Because we have the votes in the Senate.
And that's it. And so
it
makes no sense for them not to take Garland.
There's still some moderate seats, and if it's somebody too liberal and they're worried about losing. But probably whoever Hillary nominates will get confirmed.
On the heels of winning the presidency as the first woman president and all of her political capital from having been in government for so long.
And if it was a bit of a wave election.
Yeah.
But I guess what they're hoping is, you know, I want to even say, well, they hope, no, because the Senate, his colleagues in the Senate hate Cruz more than Trump.
Right.
So it's like, what is there? I mean, but if it was Cruz and Cruz nominated, I don't know, the blood-soaked corpse of Heinrich Himmler to the Supreme Court.
Do you know what just occurred to me?
Yeah.
They can't because so many of them are up for re-election. That this is not about.
But they're damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't.
No, it's not. They're not about looking at the future and looking at who the Supreme Court is going to be made up of.
There's still Senate primaries coming up.
If I allow President Obama,
that's what I'm saying,
to appoint someone, and I confirm them,
I'm going to get primaried.
I'm
going to
get primaried out, or I'm going to get elected out. I'm going to get voted.
No, no. They're worried about getting voted out, especially in places where they've pulled, like Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania. There's independents and moderates who are pissed off about them not giving a hearing.
True.
But they can be primaried from the right.
Yep.
If they do confirm, because we still have primaries coming up.
Yep.
So maybe they try to wait till after most of the primaries? Senate primaries.
And then they say, like, okay, now we'll do it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't
it
know,
has to be that,
I don't
right?
know every state's prime. So
it has
there's
to be
primaries
self-interest,
happening,
though.
Like, between now and late June.
Well,
every
yeah.
state
I mean, even
is different.
In Colorado, right? We have them
ours
until
is late
in June.
June.
Yeah. So they've got a couple of months if they can stall, not get primaried out, then hold the confirmation hearing. It's got to be self-interest more than party interest, or
so
more than actually giving a shit about the makeup of the Supreme Court.
But can McConnell turn on his heel and say, I've been pounding the desk for weeks and weeks. No. We're not going to give a hearing to any nominee, and then just turn on his heel and say, well, this guy's moderate, so I guess we'll change our mind.
I
mean,
guess primary
that
season
wasn't the
is
point.
Over and the term is 6 years, so hopefully people have short memories.
Well, we know they have short memories.
Yeah.
Are they that short, though?
I don't know. I don't actually know when McConnell's up for re-election.
Because McConnell is already hated and despised by the right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting. These Republicans, I don't know. They are not rational, like you were saying. They're just not. So, like, I can't possibly imagine what they're going to do.
Yeah, and there's other problems for the Senate, too.
Yeah.
There's a budget reconciliation with Paul Ryan.
Yes.
Is about to watch that Titanic go down that he decided to captain after it hit the iceberg.
Oh, that's the House. But, yeah, I mean, it is.
Yeah, but it involves the Senate, too.
A shit show over there right now. And they know it. And, like you were saying, the poll numbers prove that Americans know it. Like, it is a complete shit show in the Congress, both the House
and
the Senate.
It's a circus.
Yeah.
It is a wild-ass circus.
It is. So we'll see. Obama did an interview with Mara Liasson, who is the Supreme Court correspondent for NPR, which is going to air tomorrow morning, and they played a clip of it today when I was driving around, and he is definitely holding the party line of, like, pretty sure I got a four-year term, not three.
Of course. Why wouldn't he?
And also...
What president wouldn't?
Right. And also, he's like, look, you know, this guy has broad bipartisan support. There is no rational reason that Republicans should oppose him, period.
And keep a 4-4 court for the next year, which
exactly,
is ridiculous.
Exactly, which is ridiculous and not, like, I don't care. And he also went on the sort of, like, Democratic Party line of, like, the voters already decided when they elected me in 2012.
Of course they did.
But, you know, the function of government is not to not work. And whether
well,
or not
from the Republican side, that is their function.
Well, exactly.
To make
right?
it not work.
But the court needs to have 9 justices, period. Even if it were a Republican president, I would hate it, and I would be relieved if they put someone like Garland up, or someone that's the reverse sort of centrist that he is.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a Republican president and I was a Democrat and this were happening, I would be urging my senators to approve the nomination.
And a lot of them are.
They are. And there's been wide social media campaigning about, like, do your job, hashtag do your job.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage everybody who's listening to contact your senator, particularly if you have a Republican senator in your state.
Ooh, well, wait a minute. I thought you didn't want Garland.
I don't. But...
But you
kind of want...
You understand the need to have a 9-justice Supreme Court,
I do.
And you respect the president's authority to
I
nominate
do.
A justice.
Yes, I kind of believe in the rule of law and the Constitution.
What
and
kind
I
of Democrat
think,
are you?
I know. I just think
that's, I thought that was the Republicans' thing. The
yeah,
rule of law.
The rule of law.
Being the adults.
Well, yeah. No, it's me. In this moment. I think that President Obama has the right to nominate whoever he wants. I wish he had nominated someone more progressive. I get why he didn't. And I think that we need to have somebody on the court. And I think, again, to to be Little House of Cards. There's some backroom dealings going on with some of the people that are going to retire, which are, once we get Hillary in office and we have a Democratic Senate, you got to go. Because we need to get more people in the court that are not 90 and dying of ovarian cancer. And I mean, I love RBG.
They're not going to force her out.
They're not
going
to force anybody out. They're just saying, hey, this might be a good time. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think we should give toddlers blood to, and she should live forever. And
no, triple blood.
Well, so the toddler blood is something that we do with mice, and it's been like making them live forever. It's a totally other topic, but Dana will get what I'm saying. We should make her live forever. We should give her life elixir, or
why don't we just make her into a cyborg?
I'm fine with that too. I'm totally fine with that.
Robo Ginsburg.
Yep. Just replace all of her failing parts with robot parts. Whatever you need to do. She could be on the court literally forever. She is my hero. I fucking love her.
Braid in a jar.
Yes. No, that's fine too. It's fine with me. I have no problem with that at all. And like get a little like electrode thing and like it like prints out what she thinks.
Because all you need are yes or no.
Yeah, she doesn't have to write opinions. She just has to vote, right? I mean, I literally think that's fine. That's totally fine with me.
Oh God, we're horrible.
I love her.
Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah,
that you want such an existence for her. You love her so much.
I mean, I love her on the court. I'm trying to be a jerk, but like I kind of need her around, you know. Sorry, Ruth.
God, do we ever? Yeah, okay. When we have our way, we're gonna turn you into a cyborg.
Sorry,
Ruth.
I'm gonna put your brain in a jar and make you live like that so you can keep voting in the court. Love you.
I still have the visual.
Like with the glasses and like the lace around the head of the jar that she wears on above her robe.
It's a green light for yes.
Yeah.
It's a red light
for
no.
Yeah, just put electrodes in that shit. And it's going to be fine.
Okay, moving on. What else do we got?
Okay,
Rach?
So I want to talk about Donald Trump.
I know.
Do
we have to?
I know, but that's
We almost got through a whole podcast with barely mentioning Trump.
I know. But the thing is, like, it's getting serious.
Yeah, yes, it is.
He's really likely to get the delegates and or get close. And we have to talk about what is going to happen.
So what happens if... Well, if he gets the 1237, there's very little they can do. Let's say he comes in 50 to 100 delegates short.
Okay. So we've been talking about this on the podcast, like, these backroom dealings and the brokered convention. And it occurred to me that we have not explained at all what the fuck that means. So, I want to talk just briefly about how the Republican Party could legally, within every right that they have, take the nomination away from him, even though he won the majority of the primary and caucus voters.
Well, let's back way up. Let's pretend that you've just started paying attention to politics this election cycle, which is fine, is what a lot of people
absolutely do. Absolutely, especially this election cycle.
If you think you went and voted or caucused for Bernie and they just count up the votes and announce candidate, that is not how it works.
Correct.
It is much more arcane and weird.
So what you did when you went to either primary or caucus was you voted for a delegate.
Well, your vote was used in a mathematical equation.
Correct.
To allocate
a number of delegates to be assigned to a candidate of your choice in the first ballot. How confusing is that?
Depending on where your county was and your district.
Correct. And depending on if you actually won the county or just your precinct or just your district.
And how your party previously decided to allocate the number of delegates based on population and other measures.
Correct.
You following?
Nope. Okay, good. Clear as mud. Basically, remember when you were in like junior high and they were like, well, technically the popular vote doesn't elect the president. The Electoral College elects the president.
Yeah, my eighth grade social studies teacher said by the time you vote, they will have got rid of it because it's stupid.
Same. Nope. Not true. Okay. So here's the thing. Caucuses and primaries and the whole nominating process of a candidate are run by the parties.
Mm-hmm.
They're not run by the government. They're not run by any sort of official regulated capacity. They are run by the Republican Party and by the Democratic
Party. And that's why you have caucuses, because caucuses are much cheaper.
You got caucuses in some states. You got primaries in some states. Every state's different because every state's party controls that. And then those states are sort of broadly controlled by the Republican National committee and the Democratic National Committee, and those people have chairs. We got Ranch Pubis and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, both of whom are reviled. God.
Why don't they just elope?
And oh my God! And right?
Move to Antarctica?
Or just I don't care where, just out of my life. Okay, so the thing is, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but when so you go to your caucus or your primary, you place your vote. The state, whatever state you're in, determines by each party, sorry, each party within your state determines how many delegates your candidate gets. In the Democratic primary and caucus system, we do proportional delegates, meaning if Hillary Clinton wins 60% of the vote, she gets 60% of the delegates. In the Republican Party, some states are winner-take-all after a certain, roughly, but it depends on counties. It's confusing. Yeah. I'm just trying to, like, very basically, right? Yeah. In the Republican Party, there are something called winner-take-all in certain states, not all states.
Some are proportional.
Some are proportional, so sometimes if you win Ohio, you take all of the delegates in Ohio, like Kasich did. In Florida, similarly, right, it was winner-take-all. Trump took all of those.
And then I think in Illinois, it was proportional.
Poor Marco Rubio quit politics, which we'll talk about later.
Aww,
Rubio. Little Marco. Poor little Marco.
He's going to make seven figures for some bullshit think tank or sell pharmaceuticals
or
something.
On the basic, like, county level, like, when we talked about the caucuses, you and I and Molly and Dana, we all went, and we had delegates at the county level. Then the county level goes to the state level, and then the state level goes to the national level. And that's where we have the DNC, and ours is in Philadelphia, right?
Uh-huh.
And the Republicans is in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought Salt Lake City, but you're right.
Yeah, it's in Cleveland.
What the hell is in Salt Lake City, then?
I don't know.
Besides a gay mayor.
I don't know.
And a basketball team called the Jazz, which doesn't make any sense.
I have a funny story.
They moved from New Orleans.
About that. No, they didn't. But New Orleans decided there was a petition to call their basketball team the Mormon Tabernacle Choir until Utah would give up the Jazz.
They did. They used to be the New Orleans Jazz, and they moved the franchise to Utah. And that's why it's the Utah Jazz.
But New Orleans is mad about that.
Well, sure, but I'm just imagining a bunch of white Mormons in the 40s. Like,
yeah.
You know, playing jazz.
Exactly. Okay, so getting back on topic. So the delegates who go to the Republican National Convention, which is going to be in Cleveland, Ohio, are party loyalists, right?
Yeah.
They are people who've been involved in Republican politics for a very long time. They've paid their dues. They've done their volunteering. They've done their fundraising. They've gone to all the fancy dinners.
Well, they don't have superdelegates. They
don't
have
superdelegates.
Something like it.
So they have what we were talking about earlier. They have what are called bound and unbound delegates.
Right.
So this is a little wonky, but just stick with me for a second. So on the first ballot, which means the first time you vote, they go to the thing and they stand in the corner and they say, look, my state went for Trump, so I'm going to vote for Trump. So all the delegates of, like, Ohio that have to vote for Trump, right?
Which would have decided at the state delegation convention,
right?
But we won't
right.
get into that.
So,
but when you left there, you know you're going.
You know that
to,
on the first ballot, the first time you vote,
you
have
to
vote
for
Trump.
Right.
Now that's 90% of the delegates are bound, meaning that they have to do that, and that's determined by state politics, state party politics.
Right.
The other 10% can do whatever they want.
In theory.
Generally, they vote the way their state asks them to vote.
Right.
Now, if Donald Trump does not get 1,237 delegates on the first ballot, which is possible, very possible that he won't, then they do what they call a second ballot. And here's what I thought was really interesting. During the second ballot, and this is closed, this is not a public space. You can't just go to the convention if you want to, and it's not controlled by the government, it's controlled by the party. If Donald Trump doesn't get 1,237, on the second ballot, so before they do the second ballot, which is like the second vote to decide what are we going to do, there's all kinds of, like, backroom deals. There's all kinds of negotiating and talking.
Yeah,
and
what the Trump people will do at that point would be they'll go to the Cruz people and the Kasich people and whoever else is there and say, okay, well, let's unite the party and let's get this over with and let's make Trump the nominee.
And because these are Republican Party loyalists who've been in the party for decades, likely, they don't want Trump.
Right,
they don't want him.
That's
they don't
problem.
Want him, and they are free to vote their conscience. There was an NPR reporter that was talking about this earlier, and he said, To be completely honest, by the time I was done with reporting on this story, I still could not find any way, any law that would make it illegal for someone to explicitly sell their vote for money at the second ballot of the convention. Literally, there's no law against that.
That's how Lincoln got elected.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was a third or fourth ballot, and there was all kinds of shenanigans.
Wow. Yeah, like, literally, guys, we're not making this up. Like, you can literally be I want $1 million for my vote, and I'll vote for whoever can give me that. Or, you know, well, if I go your way, I want to be this in your cabinet, or I want this kickback, or I want this government contract, or I want whatever, and it's not public, and it's not illegal, and they can do whatever they want. And the concern,
and it happens every convention, but this convention is going to be
it happens
insane.
Only if you don't get to the threshold, right? Because if on first ballot you have 1237, who cares?
That's it.
But anytime you go second or third or fourth ballot, I mean, the shenanigans are crazy, and it is. Like, again, this is important. It's not run by the government. It's not regulated.
It's just the party.
It's like a private party
And the Republican Party at the presidential level is cracking up into pieces.
Yes, it is. And they desperately don't want Trump. There was a summit today
Republicans
trying to figure out, like, very, like, mainstream Republican think tanks and commentators.
How
and
do we stop
people
it?
Trying to stop Trump. How do we make this not a reality? And there's a lot of talk about this funny delegate math, and they're looking at the delegate rules, they're looking at the convention rules, exactly. When do we change them? How can we change them to our benefit? What would happen?
Here's another thing that Greg brought up on the live stream, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they make the rules, and they can change the rules at any time.
Correct.
So they could walk into Cleveland and change the rules to screw Trump.
Absolutely. And that's what they're looking at right now. How do we do that?
Or if he's under the delegate count, they don't have to change the rules. Mm-hmm. They can just do their backroom shenanigans.
Correct.
So there are a myriad ways they could derail Trump. Of course, the problem is, what do you think Trump and his supporters are going to do when that happens? You think they're going to say, oh, well, we tried.
Okay,
we got outmaneuvered.
You know, you and I have been talking about this for a couple weeks. Like, if there's a brokered convention, which is what we're talking about, which is what we've been referring to, they're going to burn it down. They're going to burn the fucking building down.
And,
right?
And Trump, I don't want to say to his credit, but to his...
He's correct.
Undying sense of honesty...
Yeah.
Basically said that today.
Okay, so...
Was that today or yesterday?
So, he's been saying it for a while.
But he said it, like, explicitly
He did explicitly. And so, one of the things that I think is really interesting, Paul Ryan came out and said, a contested convention is likely. and this NPR story, which I encourage you all to go read, it's amazing, and it explains all of this really succinctly, but also it explains that... If they take this away from Donald Trump, everything he's been saying and everything that his supporters have been saying will have become true, which is that party elites in the establishment have used their power and have used some shenanigans and some, you know, bureaucratic bullshit rulemaking
to usurp
to
the will
away.
Of the voters.
Exactly right.
And he'll be
because
right.
that's exactly true. I mean, if you look at it from not a delegate perspective, but from a...
Well, even from a delegate perspective, because there's little doubt that Trump is going to go in with the most delegates, if not the 1237.
But even from just like a popular vote perspective,
but he's
he will
mile.
Have gotten more people to vote for him than anyone else. And if you take it away from him, knowing that, that is a perversion of democracy, which... So it is and it isn't. It is... In terms of he's right that they could do that,
but
and
based
it's
on
all
party
legal,
rules.
But it's also just the way that it works.
Yeah.
And if you don't like the way that it works, then you should change the way that it works. But that is the way that it works.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is what we try to impress on the Bernie supporters who say it's all rigged, it's all rigged. I said, then do what we do.
Yeah.
Become precinct party chairs or delegates.
Yep.
Get in there, do the work.
Yep. Change the party.
And change the party, which is what we're trying to do.
Exactly.
There's only two of us. Well,
five like
when you include
Dana
and
several.
Brenna, our whole motley crew of revolutionaries.
Yes. We're all working to do our best to do that. But
right now we're in a tent in the woods, you know, in our compound. Actually, no, we're in a very cozy apartment with the heat on, actually.
Yes. But, yeah, I think that it will go to Trump's point that the system is rigged, and that the will of the people was not respected.
And what do you think he'll... I think he would call for rioting and chaos. And
I do, and I also think he'll run third party.
Well...
If they take it from him, he'll have this idea that I beat everybody else. So, fuck you. I'm just going to run by myself. And he'll lose. And the Republicans, they're going to lose no matter what. But I think that's his move. That's my opinion, is that he'll think, look... Nobody wants to vote for any other Republican as much as they want to vote for me. So I'm just going to destroy Democratic, the Republican Party.
That's what he thinks.
And I'm just going to vote third party. I'm just going to run third party, and that'll be that. I also think, yeah, there's going to be violence and chaos and rioting. He said to specifically today that if he doesn't get the nomination, there will be riots.
Yeah.
Which is, again, him not using protected speech. I mean, that's basically calling for riots,
basically,
right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Can you imagine a Bernie Sanders saying that?
Ugh.
Or Hillary, or anybody that's ever run on our side?
No! We may get poo-slinging over here and may say, like, oh, Hillary's a murderer and Bernie's a... Blah. But we're not saying we're going to burn the world down if one of them doesn't, like, no.
Well, I'm talking about the candidates.
Exactly. They are not saying, like, if I don't get the nomination...
There's going
to
be riots.
There's going to be riots. No, I'm going to go up and I'm going to give a speech to the fine next Madam President, and that'll be that. Or, right. You know, on the off chance it's Bernie. So there was some news that broke today about Ted Cruz, about Iowa. So he won Iowa by a pretty slim margin. And Iowa has proportional delegates, but they're unbound.
Right.
So they can vote for whoever they want.
I thought Cruz won by a fairly significant margin.
So he has about 50% of the delegates right now, which is significant because there was like 12 candidates at that point.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But he only won about 50% of the delegates.
Right.
So what he's doing right now is his team is contacting the Iowa state delegates that are going to go to the convention and trying to get them to vote for him in the first round.
Which there's no rules against that.
No, they're unbound. Yeah. They're not bound to vote for anybody.
They were for Rubio, they were for Carson.
That doesn't matter. They are unbound, Christie. So they can vote for whoever they want. So Cruz is really making a concerted effort to get Iowa delegates to come to his side, which is that's within his right. Certainly, I think it doesn't look good for him, but he's so hated that I don't think it matters.
Not in Iowa.
No, but just I just think it's so squicky that you're doing that.
And I think
but, like,
the formerly pledged Rubio delegates would go for Cruz before they go for Trump.
Absolutely, yeah.
I would think.
I think they'd go for Kasich before they go for Cruz.
Well, is Kasich reaching
but
out
he's,
to them?
No.
Well, we don't know.
Well,
not publicly.
Not that's been revealed publicly. The other interesting thing that I thought about today when I was listening to NPR was there was two stories sort of back to back. And they were talking about how it would be possible for Trump to win. And, you know, they said after the autopsy in 2012, which is the delightful name they used for the report that was commissioned by the Republican Party.
Women or black people or Hispanics
to vote exactly. They did some delegate math, and basically for any Republican to win, they have to win every battleground state, or they have to turn blue states red, which they didn't seem to think was very likely. And then it was just so shocking to me that we've hit this state of affairs where NPR feels comfortable talking in this way, and they said, you know, there's a white vote, that the sort of, like, great lost white vote that people have been talking about.
Pat Buchanan.
And they're like, you know, it's the angry, uneducated white man. And I'm like, you can say that on NPR? But basically they were like, yeah, if we get enough of them to come out. Are there enough of them? We don't really know.
No,
the stats show that they also don't vote. I think Trump breaks that. I think
he gets a lot of them to vote.
But there aren't enough of them. And, of course, he's not going to get Hispanics to vote. And they were sort of just talking about, like, if you get one of those angry, uneducated white men that didn't previously turn out by Trump's candidacy, you also get a suburban white mom and a Hispanic guy that don't like Trump.
No kidding.
And so
probably two for every one.
Exactly. That's what they were saying, basically, that the math kind of, they think, works out to about two. Like, so one suburban white mom and one Hispanic guy for every angry old white dude.
Yeah.
That votes.
That punches people at Trump rallies.
But they're also, like, there's some anxiety on the Democratic side about, like, he's broken every political rule there is.
But just on that side,
Trump could never run as a Democrat and get away with this.
No, of course not.
Or an independent even.
No, of course not.
He could only do what he's doing as a Republican in 2016.
Yes. And basically this Republican strategist was saying, he was the chief strategist, I think, for Mitt Romney, and he was saying, this may be our last chance, that we have to change our party, but there may be one more electoral win. We may have enough old, white, angry men this one time to switch the electorate. He may get Michigan, for example, which is something that Republicans have never been able to even imagine.
Not get Michigan.
He may get... he'll do bad in Virginia, but he may do better in Nevada. He may do...
No, he's going to get killed in Nevada.
I mean, I agree, but, like, this is their thinking at this point. They're resigned to Trump,
This was Mr. Romney's thinking strategist in 2012. They're expand the field, and we're going to win New Hampshire and pick up this one delegate in Omaha. I know. And,
but they're literally counting on angry, old, rich, not rich,
no,
poor, uneducated white men
who
turn out in such great numbers that
they want to keep their Social Security, they want to keep their Medicare or Medicaid.
Yes.
They want to keep if they're veterans, they want to keep their VA benefits.
Hate Mexicans, they hate black people, women should be in the kitchen. And
they blame the industrial ravage on black people and immigrants coming and taking their jobs. Or taking their benefits or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thinking over there right now. Because they have to be kind of resigned to Trump may be our nominee. They're like getting desperate.
Look, this Romney strategist guy has been on every friggin' state. Has anybody brought up the fact or asked him if it was his, quote, strategy to get that Trump endorsement in 2012?
No, because that I've heard.
It was the same person. Donald Trump, you know, worse because his whole claim to fame was the whole Obama birther thing.
Yep.
Has anybody asked this jackass that?
Not that I've known, seen or heard. Of course not.
No, they're all kissing his ass because he's trashing Trump.
Exactly right.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think that's about it.
We're not going to make our nightly Trump predictions that are always wrong?
I know. I'm just like, I don't know what to do with these Republicans anymore.
Well, let me tell you this. If you were worried about the Bernie people not showing up, they'll show up as an anti-Trump vote, if nothing else.
Yes. This is actually a really interesting point that I was talking to my brother, who we talk about a lot, who is a undecided swing voter. And I always say, the way Josh votes, the way the country votes.
Yeah, I think he's fairly decided at this point.
And he is so vehemently against Trump, as is his conservative girlfriend, that...
Even she, huh?
Yeah, hates Trump. Once Rubio. No, this is before Rubio dropped out that I talked to them. And he said, Rach, I'll probably just stay home. And I said, Josh, you can't stay home.
Stay home is like voting for Trump.
That's what I said. I said, you have to vote for whoever the Democratic candidate is. And I know he hates Hillary Clinton. I know you hate Hillary. You need to hold your nose and you need to vote for Hillary so that you're helping to prevent Donald Trump from being elected.
Does it hurt that you have to explain that kind of logic
to
a smart
guy like
Josh?
He literally said to me, oh my God, I never thought about it that way. So... And he's a super smart guy, right?
Yeah,
just so apolitical. And face palm, I'm like, oh my God, how are we related? This is a good point that, like, we think things are obvious. If you have people in your life that don't follow politics particularly or don't think
they've
politically...
They've just never thought of it in that way.
Really go back to basics and explain to them something that simple. And he's like, shit, I guess I gotta vote then. And, like, now he's gonna vote for Hillary Clinton. That's it. That's all I had to say. Is you don't want Trump, you got to vote Clinton so you can prevent Trump. And he's like, right, I guess if enough of us sit it out, we're like,
yeah,
I'm
you
like, gotta
exactly. like explain it another way. Like, yeah. like pretend he was violently allergic to apples.
Yeah.
And it's like, that you have to eat this apple or this orange. He's like, well, I don't really like oranges either.
Right.
Well, it's either that or you have to eat this apple.
Or you have to eat the apple. I mean, you don't like oranges, but you don't are like not deathly allergic to them, right? Right. Okay, so eat the fucking orange.
I never thought of it
like,
that way.
Hold your nose, eat the orange, and then the apple goes away.
I never thought of it
exactly.
that way.
Exactly. So, like, it took 2 seconds to explain it to him. It never occurred to me I had to until I did. And then immediately he was like, oh, well, I guess I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. And then I'm like, I guess you are. And he's like, all right, I don't want Trump. So it was like, oh, that was easy. I just converted a voter.
Yeah, your dad's going to disown him, but.
Ah, my dad is going to have a meltdown when we have a black guy and then a lady.
So my dad went to the Trump rally to be a gawker.
He did?
In Boca. I didn't hear. Well, supposedly he did. I haven't heard back from him yet.
Oh, my God. We'll have to do a follow-up. Would he do the podcast?
No.
No. All right.
No, he wouldn't.
Well, you can take a statement from him and give it to us.
Well, my sister was great. he's like, you guys want to go? You like being a smart ass?
Yeah.
And my sister said, if I want to get punched by an old white guy, I'll just go down the street and bother my neighbor or something. And or an old redneck, I think is what she said. And I was like, Dad, are you serious? Because I thought for a second, you know, he's like, no, I'm voting for Kasich. And then if it's Trump and Hillary, I might just stay home is what he said. Mm. But yeah, I haven't heard back from him. I heard that was Armando from Daily Coast one. Mm. He said it was pretty uneventful. So okay. I don't think there's much to report. And,
well, if you hear back.
Well, that's what my dad went to see, that he was hoping to see fistfights and chaos. My dad likes that kind of thing. He likes chaos.
Sure.
I kind of inherited that love of just seeing utter chaos.
Yeah.
So there wasn't, so he was probably disappointed.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Wow.
Is going to wrap it up. We covered
a
lot of...
a long episode tonight. Sorry, guys. We had a lot to cover.
We had a lot to cover. I'm sure there will be more. There's just new, crazy, and interesting stuff every day.
Yeah.
Recap, Bernie's not going anywhere, and he's going to try to woo superdelegates, probably hoping for some calamitous event. We got Obama nominating a guy to the Supreme Court that the Senate realizes they're going to look really, really, really bad not giving a confirmation to, but they will anyway. Because their balls are owned by crazy people in the House.
Correct.
That about covers that, right?
Yeah, and he's a centrist that I don't particularly like, but I don't hate.
Right, and then Donald Trump, if he doesn't get to 1237 votes, there will be total anarchy and chaos at the Republican convention in Cleveland, and God, I hope that happens.
Yeah.
It's
going to destroy
and
the
that's
party.
Just inside. Yeah. I mean, outside, you may actually have, like, the Klan showing up and certainly protesters.
Absolutely.
You know, I know people that are going to be out there protesting. So,
absolutely. And it'll just break into gross.
And I hope that people don't actually get hurt, but I almost think it's kind of inevitable at this point, especially if Trump keeps fanning the flames the way he has.
Absolutely.
But he kind of has to, because if he walks it back now, then these people will lose interest to a degree, right?
Yep, absolutely. And just... really quickly to that point, if he tries to do the thing that everyone tries to do after pivot. The primary and pivot to the center, he's going to lose all the momentum of all those voters, and it's going to be a literal landslide in November.
And they would just be, oh, great. He's just another politician after all.
He was lying to us, and they're going to lose total interest.
Maybe. I think he tries to hedge his bets that he's made that point enough that it's sort of a wink-wink move to the middle, but that won't fool anybody either. I don't know.
We
it's
can,
crazy.
Yeah, we'll see.
Trump and the Republicans have so boxed themselves in.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
It's hard to imagine this happens orderly. The only way this happens orderly is if everybody lines up behind Trump.
Yeah.
But they're not.
They're not gonna. There is public campaigns against the Republican frontrunner from their own party.
Yeah.
People hate him. They do not want him because they know he cannot win.
And there was a little bit of that for Romney because he was Mormon or whatever.
Not like
oh,
this.
Nothing.
No.
Nothing close to this. That's my point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's a crazy time to be alive and involved in politics, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we picked a hell of a time to start a podcast.
We sure did.
And a movement.
Yes, we did. Anyway, okay, are we good?
We're good. So everybody, we'll be back on the air when we feel like it, maybe tomorrow, maybe in 2 days, maybe in a week, maybe in a month, maybe never. But
we'll be back soon.
Probably in a day or two.
I promise you.
And we'll have Molly and Dana and the whole gang back on for you.
Yes.
So that's it. As usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and we will talk to you later. Adios, amigos.